And we are live. Happy Tuesday, October 27th, 2020. Young Jake, good morning to you, my fine friend.
Hello. Hi, yes.
Hello. So last night I decided I was fat, and I bought a Bowflex.
Okay.
And actually what it was is that I was talking to my boss at work, and he was buying some other Nordic track, you know, flywheel, I'm going to get buff at ass piece of equipment. So I immediately reacted to that and bought a Bowflex. And this is something I think is really interesting. We've been talking about home fitness during the pandemic for a couple of months. We have a Peloton, which I like a lot, actually. But I need strength. I am a big believer in lifting. I love lifting, strength training. It is really something that I am passionate about with fitness. But I am also passionate about not fucking dying, so I'm not going to the gym. Excuse my French. I'm not going to the gym during the pandemic. And so I really haven't been working out. So, you know, my weight is ticked up by a pound or 70. And so I've been looking at different ways to get back in shape. So considering my house is never going to sell, I thought the right thing to do was to buy a Bowflex.
Right, right.
And so I bought a Bowflex last night, and I'm actually really excited about it. I don't know when it's going to get delivered because Bowflex doesn't even send you emails saying, congratulations, you just gave us a ton of money that you're never going to get back for this awesome clothes hanger that we just sold you, because you usually wind up hanging clothes on it, but whatever. Anyway, the point is, I'm really excited about it. So what's the first thing you said to me?
How much does it cost?
No, that was the second thing. Oh, bro, let's lift. I'm coming over. A, you're never using my Bowflex, ever. Okay? B, yeah, it was not cheap. It was about $2,600.
Yeah, that's expensive, for sure.
It is. It's about the same price as my Peloton.
Yeah.
So I've invested in it. Because truth be told, about 90% of the time, Mrs. Monty and I eat pretty well. And it is simply that, A, it's Africa hot in Arizona all the time. And I just don't like being around other people right now. So I think this is a good idea, Jake. Do you think I'll use it?
I have hope that you'll use it more than the Peloton. I think the Peloton is tough because, you know, cardio is not easy, you know, like it's a boring thing that is challenging mentally. I think, you know, with weightlifting and strength training and things like that, it's just, I don't really know how to describe it other than to just say it's more fun for you and for me. Like, I like strength training more, and I think, I would hope that, you know, you use it 5 days a week. Like, I would use it 5 days a week. I would use the Peloton in conjunction with it. And the reason I would is because that it allows you to create a total, you know, package. And by the way, you have a BOSU ball, you have an exercise ball, like you essentially have everything you need. Now there's not going to be any replacement for, you know, going to the gym and having specific, you know, setups for different, you know, weightlifting. Like you can't really.
But see, that's what I like about the Bowflex. You can do that. You can do bench. You can do chest, back, arms, legs. Like, you can squat on a Bowflex. Like, that's why I bought it. I have been looking at it and thinking about it. And like, we had actually gone into some fitness stores over the weekend. The problem is so many people are buying home gyms right now and building home gyms. Equipment is 6 to 8 months out in some cases.
Yeah.
Like, getting a higher end home gym that includes, like, you know, the things you need, whether that be a bench, like, it's tough right now just to get a bench.
Yeah.
Like, you cannot get a bench press set up right now. I went to two stores and looked at like five or six others online. Everybody sold out of bench press setups until like January at the earliest.
Yeah.
And most of them were March and April. So I actually think Bowflex, that the reason I went with Bowflex is because, you know, the way that the machine operates is supposedly better for you. and it gives you the ability to do everything. You can do a full leg workout. You can do full ab workout, full everything. That's why I'm really looking forward to it. So I agree with you. I will probably use it 5 days a week. You know, and it will get me back into a regular Peloton routine, which I need. Because if I'm doing, you know, 5 days on Bowflex, 3 days on Peloton, that's going to be really good for me.
Yeah.
So it'll just enhance the fact that we're eating better. And I'll get back to being more functional. That's one of the odd things about the pandemic, by the way. How much fitness do you think the pandemic's taken from you?
Oh, I mean, quite a bit. I mean, you know, we were, before the pandemic, we were playing basketball 5 days a week. And, you know, we weren't really lifting a lot. We were just playing a lot of basketball. And I think, you know, I think the pandemic has just, it's not really as much about the fact that it's taken fitness from us as much as it's just sat us down. I mean, it's essentially just said, hey, you have to stay home, and home is not where we as humans mentally associate working out. And so it's difficult to get yourself going working out at home. And that's why for me, like, you know, as much crap as I get on this show about the dog, like, that was one of the reasons I got the dog, because it needs to be exercised. And so, like, that was one of the main reasons that I got it. And so, you know, yeah, I'll look forward to gyms opening back up, you know, and being able to get there safely once this pandemic is officially put to bed. But that's not going to happen for, I mean, at this point, I have no faith that it's going to happen before the end of 2021. I really don't. Like, I even when a vaccine comes out, people aren't going to take it. And that's probably a 6-month process at least. So to me, I just think we have to figure out how to exercise and what we have to do. You know, and that is, unfortunately, that is investing more money into home fitness. So that's kind of where it is.
Yeah. So I'm excited. The one thing I worry about is Barry's going off on some rant about how Bowflex sucks.
Barry, do you like anything, bro? Like, is there anything that you will talk positively about? Like, would you?
Not really.
Like, Barry, if you're going to hate on Bowflex, are you the guy that gets ripped on the rack, or what's the deal?
No, he's got – Barry's a rowing machine guy.
Oh, boy. Come on, Barry.
And so he's old school. Barry, I think Barry told me he's 53. His dad gave him his old rowing machine, and it uses water so that you know, it gives you resistance and all this stuff, and it's a total body plus cardio workout. And okay, cool, man. I you know what? Row your ass off, which is great. And by the way, Barry has always been the guy that's competed in strongman competitions. So I give him credit for that, but it is what it is. Anyway, I will, obviously, if you follow me on Twitter and Instagram, you'll see when I get my Bowflex, if ever. Because I don't even know how long the delivery cycle is at this point.
How long?
But once I get it, obviously I'll post pictures.
How long was it to get the Peloton?
A week, less than a week.
Okay.
But that was, I don't even know when I got, that was like February or something, February or March.
Okay.
So early in the pandemic, that we got the Peloton.
Yeah.
So it's a little different now because, like I said, everybody's building home gyms, so we'll see about that. But, yeah, follow me on Twitter and Instagram, The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show, and I'll put pictures up and all that good stuff. And, obviously, I will have a full review of the Bowflex when I get it here on the show, because I know you'll be sitting on the edge of your seat waiting to see what I think. As you were watching the Cardinals upset the Seahawks, in what was an entertaining game, I don't necessarily know if it was great football. Russell Wilson, I thought, played one of his poor games of the year, but it doesn't really matter. The Cardinals beat the Seahawks 37-34 in overtime. The Cards now have a bye week as they await to play the Dolphins in 2 weeks. I mean, this was a huge must-win for the Cardinals. If they dropped a 5-3 and they lose in the division, Jake, I think their playoff hopes would have taken a huge hit. But I don't think you can come away from this game anything but impressed with the Birds.
Yeah, you know, I thought they played they played well. You know, obviously, you know, the Buda Baker play is what is basically the only thing that people are talking about. But, you know, overall, I as I was watching the game and watched it throughout, I did feel like there was, you know, obviously some inconsistency for the Cardinals, which is what led them to have to go to overtime to win the game. If they would have made a couple more plays in regulation on defense, they wouldn't have had to go to overtime. And what the specific one I'm referencing is the deep shot down the field late in the game when Patrick Peterson gets beat and Buda Baker's all turned around. And when I saw that play happen, I just simply asked the question, how does that happen? How are you guys, you know, so far out of communication that that Buda Baker is literally spinning? Like, he literally did a 360 trying to figure out where the football was. Like, I don't know how that happens.
And I think the shocking thing was that the Seahawks let a 10-point lead late in the fourth quarter get away. You just don't see that out of the Seahawks on the regular. But I thought Kyler Murray was spectacular. You know, his ability to run the football is as I've talked about for going on a year and a half now, is lethal. And now that they're incorporating it and using it, I think it's remarkable. And this idea that, you know, he is an MVP candidate, it's not an idea anymore. He absolutely is an MVP candidate. If this team makes the playoffs, which I don't think they will, I look at their schedule and, you know, they have the Bills, they're at Seattle, they're at the Patriots, and then they're home for the Rams. Those are four really difficult games coming up. Now, the Bills and the Rams being here in Arizona is a big advantage for them. But these are very difficult games that they have coming up on their schedule. So I'm not convinced that they're going to make the playoffs, but they're going to be in every one of those games.
Yeah.
And again, not saying we told you so, but we kind of told you this game had come down to the end of the wire, and we wouldn't be surprised if the Cardinals won it. Now, as a betting man, of course, we took the Seahawks. But I think the Cardinals are vastly improving. Cliff Kingsbury has to be more situationally aware. I mean, he costs them the game with that Zane Gonzalez timeout. He absolutely cost him the game. Like, just a ridiculous lack of clock management there. But at the end of the day, they got the win, and I think that's really what matters. Where are you at with Kyler Murray? I mean, we joke about verticality and his small hands and his small feet, which usually means he wears smaller shoes. My point is, I think he cemented himself as one of the, if not the best young quarterback in the NFL right now.
Yeah, well, there's no doubt about that. And I think if you look at his evolution since, you know, obviously the beginning of his career last year, and you look at where he is now, I think you, if we're going to talk about Cliff Kingsbury, we've got to talk about how great of a job he's doing developing Kyler Murray. And I think, you know, yeah, the as much as we joke about the short thing, it is absolutely a factor, and they figured out how to work with it. And I think that you have to give him a lot of credit for that. I will say that as the season goes on and as you watch this team week in and week out, the things that I look for out of Kyler Murray are maintaining his, as you called it, situational awareness for Kyler Murray specifically.
Yeah. Yes.
When he's running. I mean, he's got to continue to run, but he's got to continue to not take punishment as a runner. He's got to continue to be safe with his running. And if he keeps doing that, they're going to be fine. But if this team cannot afford for Kyler Murray to get hurt on any level. They cannot afford it. It will end their season. And so that's why I say, as long as Kyler continues to run it, but be conservative and understand when he needs to go down, I think this team's going to be just fine. I wouldn't be surprised if they beat the Bills. I don't think they're going to beat the Rams. That Rams defense, if we saw anything last night, is just still absolutely dominant. And overall, I think it's going to come right down to the wire for the Cardinals getting into the postseason.
Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised with the way that the Cardinals were able to stay together. I think Larry Fitzgerald, you know, taking the ball and running it back to the official to spot it was critical to them winning this game. So little plays like that, I don't think you can undervalue them at all. What about this DeAndre Hopkins story where he is on his way to the game in his Ferrari and he comes across the Trump parade? And for those of you who don't know and are outside of Arizona, there was a huge Trump parade over the weekend, hundreds of cars. driving together with flags, honking their horns, holding signs, like in a slow procession on the freeway. And DeAndre Hopkins decided he didn't like that very much. So he interrupted the parade by getting in between a couple of cars, flipping them the bird. So, of course, people started taking pictures, and it wasn't too long before everybody figured out, hey, that's DeAndre Hopkins. So it's become this huge story. And frankly, there's people talking about him being fined or suspended, and I think it's ridiculous. Why would you fine or suspend DeAndre Hopkins for what he did?
What law did he break? Like, what did he, what, he wasn't drunk, he wasn't under the influence while driving. He
was not driving recklessly or endangering people's
like
lives.
Like, there wasn't, and that's why I say, like, flipping somebody off, like, that kind of, you know, that, does that not fall under, like, freedom of speech? Like, there's not, what law are you breaking? Yeah, it's offensive to some people, I'm sure, but, you know, there's not, the NFL is not going to do anything about this. I mean, there's just simply nothing to be done. It, for lack of a better word, it's just not that big of a deal. You know, I mean, it would be different if, you know, he was like threatening people or like saying, hey, I'm going to go like kick your ass or something. But he wasn't doing that. He was literally, it sounds like he was trolling people in his Ferrari. He's like, hey, you guys are all idiots, you know, and I'm DeAndre Hopkins in my Ferrari. Here's the bird. Have a nice day. You know, that's essentially what it sounds like he did. And to be honest with you, personally, I don't have a problem with it. But, you know, professionally, as a Cardinals player, as an NFL player, yeah, you're held to a higher standard. So maybe you can make a case he shouldn't have done it, but I just don't think it's a big deal.
Yeah, I have no problem with what he did. I think political expression in this country is one of the most sacred freedoms that we have. So I have no problem with it. I think a lot of people like to make more of those things than they are. So I say good for you, DeAndre Hopkins, whether you're a Trump supporter or not. You know, I think you have to support what he did there. NFL headlines that we need to get to. The Bears lose last night to the Rams on Monday Night Football 24-10. And I'll just keep saying it until it happens. Matt Nagy should be fired. This was an abysmal performance by his Bear football team, specifically on offense. They are lost. They are listless. They don't have a quarterback. They don't understand how to run the football. Their route running is terrible. Their offensive line play is absolutely awful. And I just don't understand what is the game plan and why are you calling plays when you're calling them? Not putting players in position to succeed, not understanding what the defense is trying to do. You're running the football against man coverage. You're throwing the football against two deep. Like there's just no situational awareness. And I know I keep saying that word, but Matt Nagy has no idea in my mind what he is doing right now. And Jake, if I'm the Bears, I would fire him today.
Yeah, look, I completely agree. I think, you know, last night is the perfect example of the fact that the Bears just don't have direction. They're like, you know, at least if you're a struggling football team, but you're built on the premise of running the football first, like that's what you do. Okay, at least you can work with that. You know, hey, we're going to stay committed to running the football and we're going to do our best to work the pass off of that. Okay, you have direction, you have a stated goal. This team is essentially on a 2x4 in the middle of the ocean with no direction. I mean, that's what this team is, and I don't understand, you know, what the Bears front office is looking at. Whether we want to say it or not, Trubisky was a mistake, right? Trubisky was a miss. There's just no doubt about it anymore. You're in a position now where that pick has forced you to have a washed-up kind of quarterback as your starter. He is a bench player. That's what his role in the NFL is. We knew it going in, and we knew this would be a problem. And so you add that, and you compound it with the fact that Nagy doesn't have situational awareness, as you were just saying, that it's a recipe for failure, and that's exactly what they're doing. And that's why I say, as great as it is that they're, you know, 5-2 now or whatever the hell they are, they're just not, those wins are not luck wins, but they're games that most likely they shouldn't have won. And that's the sad part about it. So yeah, I'd be more than comfortable firing him now, going the Houston Texans route, fire him now, lose the rest of the year, get high in the draft and draft your next quarterback. That's what this team needs. That's what you got to build on.
Well, and I think Ryan Pace, the general manager of the Bears, shouldn't get a free pass either, because I still maintain as great of a player that he is. The Khalil Mack trade now, I think we've seen for sure, has not netted the effect that the Bears had hoped for. And I think you're going to struggle mainly because you moved up to take Mitchell Trubisky instead of the guy that currently plays quarterback in Kansas City and Patrick Mahomes. And you have never recovered from that. And I don't know how you ever recover from that, especially when your football coach is not very good at football coaching. So I would move on from him. I really would. The Steelers are 6-0. I think this is one of the most surprising stories in the NFL. I don't think there's any doubt you have to put them in the conversation and favor them in just about any game that they're going to play. How surprised are you that the Steelers are this good?
Yeah, I'm definitely a little bit surprised, but I think the thing you have to understand with this Steelers team is this is their best start since I believe it was 78, the season of 1978, and in that season they go to the Super Bowl and they do their thing. And so when I look at this team this time, I think the real key to their success, and this is a common theme across the NFL, is you don't have a question mark at quarterback. Big Ben is playing really well, even in his older age. You've got a really athletic defense that can make a lot of different plays. They can beat you a lot of different ways. They're more than happy to play playground football where you're just trying to pound the rock. They're more than happy to get physical with you. If you're a team that's trying to go down the field in the passing game, they're more than happy to play zone and cover you that way. And so that's why I say this defense is going to be really tough to handle. And when you have a quarterback like you do in Ben Roethlisberger, who is definitely a Hall of Famer and can make plays and can make things happen in situations that they shouldn't, That's the best case scenario in the NFL. And so moving forward, yeah, I definitely think they're in the Super Bowl conversation. And I think at this point, it's great for the NFL that the Steelers are good again, for sure.
Well, in an interesting situation in that division while we're there is the Cleveland Browns, who are now 5-2. After Johnny Manziel threw for, or I said it, Johnny Manziel, after Baker Mayfield threw for 297 yards and 5 touchdowns. And the reason I was going to say Johnny Manziel is because I think Baker was that guy that was supposed to move you past Johnny Manziel. And I think a performance like this gives him a chance to kick that fifth-year option door open. I think if Baker can continue to develop like this, and if they are able to, if they're able to grow and build behind him the rest of this year, I don't see any reason, Jake, that the Browns would not pick up his fifth-year option.
Yeah, this one, maybe we just disagree on this one, I guess. But to me, if you're the Browns, you've got a team loaded with talent. Obviously, Odell is done for the year with a torn ACL. But this team, for the most part, is loaded with talent. And I feel like Baker's holding them back. And the reason I say that is because of his ability to turn the football over so consistently. I mean, you're talking about 2 weeks in a row where you turned it over on the first throw of the game. You know, how does that happen?
Yeah, 15 touchdowns and 7 interceptions is not great.
And I think the problem is 15 touchdowns would be an acceptable number on a team that doesn't have Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry and a bunch of weapons on offense. But the problem for him is you do, and you have good running backs. And so that's why I say, think about what this team would be like if you had a quarterback that was experienced,
But my issue with Odell Beckham Jr. is the same as it's always been.
Mm-hmm.
He does not make quarterbacks better. He will occasionally make a spectacular play, but he is not a guy, in my opinion, that you want to rely on in big pressure situations when, he's that guy that will run right past the defensive back for an 80-yard touchdown. But if you need 3 yards on an in route, I'm not throwing the ball to Odell. And I think he is an odd duck. And I hesitate to say the Browns will be better off without him. But I think that anytime that you can get Rashard Higgins the ball more on the Browns, I think you're in a much better situation. Baker Mayfield's quarterback rating throwing to Higgins is through the roof. Throwing down the field to Odell, that's not where Baker's been successful.
Well,
and I think when I look at guys like Bryant and, You know, it was great to see Njoku catch that touchdown. I think he's a critical figure for them. I think Odell Beckham Jr. being injured solves some problems for Baker Mayfield.
Well, hey, if that's the case, if Odell going down simplifies Baker Mayfield's existence as a quarterback on this team, then that's great. You know, hopefully then that allows Baker Mayfield to complete more passes, run the offense more efficiently, you know, do all of those things that we look for him to do. But I think the biggest thing for Baker is he's got to make more plays of the kind that he should make. Like, he's got to complete more throws that he should complete. And frankly, he's got to stop committing those two or three bad turnovers every single week. If he can just mitigate the two or three bad decisions per game, because you think about it, an NFL team snaps the ball probably 60, 70 times a game, you know, on offense. So it's not like we're talking about Baker Mayfield screwing up 30, 40 times a game. But in the NFL, you know, your margins on offense are slim. You can't give the ball away for free. That can't happen.
Well, and they run the ball really well, too. I mean, I think that's something you have to talk about, and that they're not taking advantage of that. Some of it is schematics with the way they pass protect is, you know, is questionable. But I think when you have guys like Hunt and Chubb and Johnson, you know, you have a lot of guys that can run the football and catch the football. And as well as they throw the ball to the tight ends on this team, I'm not absolving Baker Mayfield of any kind of guilt or blame here, but I think this was a huge step in the right direction, and he needs to replicate that this weekend. Then you have the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, by the way, who are 5-2. I think Tom Brady played one of his best games as a professional.
Yeah.
In the regular season, and I'm not talking about Super Bowls, so let's not get crazy, but as a professional, I think last week Tom Brady played one of his best games, and beating the Raiders in Las Vegas is no small feat. And to do it 45-20, I think Tom Brady is playing some of the best football of his career, Jake, and I think they're a legit NFC title contender.
Yeah, I want when we're talking about Tom Brady, I want people to compare the Bucs to where the Patriots are at right now. And the reason I want people to do this is because it makes you appreciate Tom Brady's greatness as an athlete, but as a leader as well. You look at where the Patriots are, and you notice how they don't have direction, right? They're kind of just, they're trying to figure out if Cam's reliable. They're probably not making the postseason this year. And the team is largely the same. You know, you still have a lot of the same names. You know, it's not like the team is totally different. And so then you look at where Brady is with the Bucs. Yeah, they struggled the first couple of weeks. Brady lit his teammates up, and now all of a sudden, what are they doing? They're dominating teams. And I know the Raiders aren't the best team in the league, but my point is, you put up 45 points on any team, you're going to struggle to lose that game. And so when I look at Tom Brady, I think one of the biggest questions that he faced leaving the Patriots was it Bill or was it Brady who was winning games? And I think we can definitively say it was indeed Tom Brady making the plays, winning the game, leading his teammates, and now we're just seeing it once again in Tampa Bay. And so, you know, as this team continues to get better and Brady continues to get closer with his teammates, I don't see any reason or any way that you can count them out of the Super Bowl discussion. I think they are one of the teams in that group that could absolutely be there in the end.
Well, and I'll just say the name Scotty Miller. That's all you need to know. Do you know who Scotty Miller is? You probably know. He was the leading receiver for the Tampa Bay Bucs this week. Good old number 10 out of Bowling Green.
Oh, you mean Tom Brady was able to make a name out of nobody once again in his career?
But that's my point. You know, when you have a guy in Scotty Miller, 6 catches, 109 yards, Tom throws 4 touchdowns to 4 different receivers. I mean, that's Tom Brady at his best, and I think they're a real threat. As I guess, is Jared Stidham to take Cam Newton's job in New England, speaking of your beloved Patriots? I think this is a fascinating situation because the New England Patriots are 2-4. They are 3 games behind the Buffalo Bills in the AFC East. And there's talk that Cam Newton may have lost his job over the weekend. He even said after their 33-6 loss to the 49ers in Foxborough, He even said that he realizes driving home, he said to himself, if you keep playing like this, this change is going to be permanent. And I don't know how you explain how bad the Patriots are.
Yeah.
And I don't know how you explain just how poorly Cam Newton played over the weekend.
Yeah, look, I don't think if you're the Patriots, going to Stidham is the right call. I just don't. I think if you're going to go that route, then you're waving the white flag on this season and you're saying that you're going to try and get up in the draft. So, you know, and if that's the choice, that's fine. I'd even be more than happy with that because I think the Patriots are one of the teams that's got to get a young quarterback in the draft that can really make a difference. They got to get the Joe Burrow of this year's draft. So that's in my opinion, what they need to do. But my point here is that, yeah, Cam Newton came to the Patriots on a one-year deal, betting on himself and essentially saying he's going to revive his career. And he hasn't done that yet. You know, he has not shown the ability to be a frontline starter every single week in and week out for an NFL team. And I think his days of being Superman and being Mr. Physical Quarterback, I think those days are behind him. I think he needs to focus on being a pocket passer, and I think he needs to learn this offense, and he needs to make his throws. That's what I think he needs to do.
Well, and the bigger question is, what the heck is going on with the New England defense? I mean, with all due respect to Jeff Wilson Jr.,
Jeffy.
He had a career day, a guy that, again, you don't even know who that is, most of America. That's the running back for the 49ers, who had a career game against the Patriots. They're in transition. The Patriots are a mess, and I don't know how you fix it. I really don't. I look at the Patriots, and they're at the Bills. They're at the Jets. Okay, so they're going to beat the Jets. Then they have the Ravens, the Texans, the Cardinals, the Chargers. I mean, I look at the way Justin Herbert's playing in Los Angeles, not San Diego, which is where they should be. Show me your lightning bolt. But the point is that you have to find a way to right the ship and right the ship right now, because I think the Patriots are in a lot of trouble. They're not benching Cam Newton. And finally, speaking of a lot of trouble, Fathead Mike McCarthy, who's got to have the largest cranium this side of Kim Jong-un. No, McCarthy's head is bigger. Anyway, the point is, the human Mylar balloon for a head, Mike McCarthy, the Packers are an abysmal organization. I don't know. I'll stop. I'm just being a jerk. Anyway, Fathead Mike McCarthy is on the verge of being fired in Dallas.
Yep.
According to anonymous sources,
Jerry Jones,
that say the players don't like him. They don't believe in him. And by the way, they're not very good. They looked terrible against the Cardinals, as we talked about last week. And you lose again. They're 2-5. And it was not a team that is on the verge of the playoffs that humiliated you this week, like the Cardinals. It was the Washington football team that's not called the Redskins anymore. And it was 25-3.
Bro.
And I don't know if they've reattached Andy Dalton's head to his body after what John Bostic did. But the worst part about that is no Cowboys stood up for Andy Dalton. Good old fire crotch. Nobody stood up to defend, you know, the starting quarterback of your football team who was concussed. And I'm serious. I think his head fell off his body on the field after that hit, which was a shoulder to the head of a sliding quarterback. And nobody on the Cowboys did a thing about it.
Nope.
And it just shows you this team is not plugged in. And I don't know, Jake, is this a Mike McCarthy problem or is this a player problem?
This is a Jerry Jones problem. This is above all that. And the reason I say it's a Jerry Jones problem is because this team has been rudderless for a while. And it's funny, we're talking about the Patriots, we're talking about the Bears, and now we're talking about the Cowboys. And what do we know? All three of those teams have quarterback issues. The Patriots have a guy who's older in Cam Newton. The Cowboys have a guy in Andy Dalton who's a tryhard who's been trying to make it in the league and made it on the league with a bad team for a while. And now that he's...
Fire crotch, please.
Yeah, the Red Rocket, fire crotch. The guy that's looking for the pot at the end of the rainbow, whatever you want to say. This guy...
That's a leprechaun reference because he's got red hair. Get it?
Yeah.
Leprechaun?
Right. Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, the pot apparently was empty because he got left for dead on the field. And so my point is that this team that they've built is not together. You know, I think they probably would have treated it differently if it was Dak. But they already went through that because Dak got killed on the field too. So that's why I say this season's over for the Cowboys. McCarthy needs to be let go. And I don't know who the replacement is, this whole McCarthy thing is not going well. It's just not.
I don't think you fire a guy after half a season.
Well, the Cardinals did it, did they not?
No, not really.
One and done.
I mean, they fired him after one season, but I think you lost your starting quarterback, who is on pace to have the greatest quarterback season in the history of the NFL. That's not an accident. Mike McCarthy was having a good impact on Dak until Dak's leg bone came through his ankle skin. Anyway, the point is, listen, it's the Dallas Cowboys, so nobody feels bad for them. Screw them. That's why you don't – like, this is why I say anybody that's a former Packer, just ostracize them. Kaepernick them. Just don't let them back in the league ever.
Kaepernick
them. No, okay, I'll stop. You know, I'm just being bitter. Hail to the Redskins. Anyway, the point is BYU is continuing to play dominant football. Jake, you know, this is your weekly opportunity here on the show. It's Tuesday.
Listen.
It's 6:53 in the morning. Would you like to apologize? And if the word apologize is not the word you're trying to run here, would you like to backtrack completely, eat your crow, and tell America that you're dumb, or would you like to simply backtrack?
I will take option C, which is they haven't played anybody, and they will continue to not play anybody. But the point is Zach Wilson is a candidate for the Heisman. I will give you that. And I want to see this team play a top 10 opponent. That's what I want. I want them to prove it against a legitimate proven team. That's what I want to see out of BYU. And until that happens, my stance isn't going to change.
Well, that's probably not good then, because they play the mighty Western Kentucky this weekend before playing Boise State.
Oh my God.
On the blue turf in Boise. Top 25 team, Boise.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Right? Then they take on North Alabama on ESPN.
Well,
not one or two, on ESPN3.
Well.
And then they finish up against the Aztecs of San Diego State.
Hey, so what we're saying is their season's going to be decided in whatever bowl game they get.
What we're saying is that Zach Wilson should be more respected than the fourth choice for the Heisman Trophy. Since you're being a jerk and you won't apologize for the unscrupulous, ridiculous things that you said about BYU and, you know, caffeinated beverages, let's say, you should apologize, but you won't because you have no moral compass. Trevor Lawrence is number one. Mac Jones, the quarterback at Alabama.
Roll Tide.
Roll Tide is number two. Justin Fields, the quarterback at the. Wait, you got to pause. The Ohio State is number three, even though he's played one game against a fairly crappy Nebraska team.
Yeah.
And then Zach Wilson, whose BYU football team is undefeated and has beaten 16 top 10 teams.
Yeah.
Over the history of the football program. they're 6-0. They're 6-0. Zach Wilson is dominating. The guy's got 1,900 yards throwing. He's got 16 touchdowns against one interception, and he's fourth.
Yeah.
I said four.
I don't know why this is so shocking to you. Again, like, I really don't understand why you are surprised by this. Like, he doesn't play at a P5. B, his schedule, again, I know we keep leaning on
wait,
but
he does play at a P5. Thank you.
Well, whatever. It's not Alabama. It's not Clemson. It's not all these other institutions where the other three candidates are playing. I'll say that. B, the stats he's putting up, again, are against Alabama State. They're not against, you know.
Jake, they haven't played Alabama State.
Okay, whoever.
Texas State, Northern
Northern Alabama, sorry.
I'm not going to continue to allow this kind of blatant disrespect.
Listen,
for TDS.
Listen.
I'm not gonna do it.
When we get back to doing the show together in person, whenever that happens, I'm gonna have a whole segment with underlying music and everything lined up for this because this is way too funny.
Jake, it's ridiculous that BYU is not a top 10 team. It is ridiculous to me. Like I look at the top 25 right now. Clemson, number one. Alabama, number two.
The
Ohio State, number three. My R and We, the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame, number four. Georgia, with a loss. With a loss. At 3-1 is number five. Oklahoma State, number six. Cincinnati is number seven. Let's recount the great wins for Cincinnati. USF, Tulsa, SMU. Well, you know, oh wait, the Tulsa game was delayed.
Tulsa is better than North Alabama, okay?
Oh, lick ball. You know what, dude? No. Sorry, man. They didn't play Tulsa. It was postponed. So their win was over Army.
Wait, but BYU has Navy.
Army. They beat Austin. Oh, my God. Cincinnati beat Austin P. So, of course. No. I'm not doing it. Okay, I am going to do it. Screw you. BYU should be ranked ahead of Cincinnati.
No.
Texas A&M, 3-1 Texas A&M. Wisconsin beat Illinois.
Bro,
Western Kentucky is a better win than Illinois.
Hey, if Wisconsin would be BYU's best opponent if they were on the schedule this year.
Wisconsin beat Illinois.
Right.
Illinois, but I just say Illinois because my wife says Bellows. Anyway, the point is, the point is that Wisconsin's played one game against a really crappy football team in Illinois. Oh, well, we're just going to install them ahead of BYU because it's a Mormon thing. Like, they knocked on my door too much. Time to vote Wisconsin ahead of Illinois. Or beat Illinois, so we'll put them. Anyway, the excuses are that BYU's not in the top 10 because Cincinnati beat Army. Anyway, this is my point. Zach Wilson should be third behind Trevor Lawrence and Mac Jones for the Heisman.
Okay.
Period.
All right.
Period. And if he runs the table and he keeps throwing for 8 million yards a game, and there's no reason that he shouldn't, the Boise game is going to be a big one. That's a top 25 opponent.
Yeah.
He's got to play well there. The disrespect of BYU at some point.
It's not disrespect, though. They don't play anybody. Like.
Right. The pandemic took away my fitness.
Matter.
That's why I'm fat.
It doesn't matter.
But the pandemic also took away BYU's schedule.
It took away everybody's schedule.
By the way, I'd just like to ask all my friendly asshole AP voters, Oregon hasn't played a game yet. And they're 14th. So when the Pac-12 starts playing football, probably in like next June at some point, Well, in a couple of weeks here. When they start playing football, does Oregon all of a sudden become like a top five team?
Yep.
Because they have cute uniforms yes. and stuff.
Like, it's the Nike sponsorship.
They haven't played a game, and they're 14th.
Yep.
No, I'm serious. USC hasn't played a game, and they're 21st. Whatever. Anyway, by the way, when the Pac-12 does start playing, Jake, I don't know if you saw this story or not. Larry Scott in the Pac-12 won't be on TV. Because he was unable to come to an agreement with any of the major TV carriers or Google via YouTube. So, good luck watching Pac-12 football on the regular this year.
So, he's still employed. He can't get a TV deal done.
No, he's not employed. He is still the highest paid commissioner in all of college athletics. Larry Scott of the Pac-12. With no TV deal.
Why would you go to the Pac-12? Why would anybody go play in the Pac-12?
This is incredibly damaging. And if those that employ him in the Pac-12, the presidents of these universities, can't see that this is damaging their product, they're up in the night. I really don't get it. World Series, Game 6. Ian Snell versus Tony Gonsolin.
It's Blake Snell, please. Thank you very much.
Ian Snell. It's a joke. Anyway, point is, Tony Gonsolin has a 6.45 ERA.
Yeah.
The discussion around the Los Dodgers, should they be pitching Walker Buehler tonight to try and win the World Series as soon as they can?
No, because they have the luxury of immense offensive ability, and Blake Snell never gets past the fifth inning. So even if he were to dominate them for five innings, they still got a great chance to win the game.
I prefer Ian Snell. Anyway, the point is, I agree. Blake Snell this is the start of his life. It's the biggest start of his career, no doubt about it. And I would not start Walker Buehler here. I would save him on full rest for game 7. He's been dominant, and I don't think there's any reason to mess with that. By the way, again, since you wouldn't apologize to BYU for absolutely savaging them with your ridiculous takes, are you prepared to apologize to Clayton Kershaw, and are you ready to let America know that you were completely wrong about Clayton Kershaw and that he has a beard that is probably full of bed bugs, but he continues to pitch well this postseason? Go ahead and apologize. I'll wait.
Yeah, I mean, he's doing so much more than Blake Snell is. 5 2/3 in his last start. Snell. I mean, man, that's really scintillating stuff, you know? I think overall Clayton Kershaw is always going to chase the couldn't get it done in the postseason narrative. He is pitching better.
Dude, he's over that now.
He's not.
He has won 2 games for them. And if they win the World Series, he's a big reason why they won the World Series. He's over that.
Mm, okay. Well, when we look at when we have the discussion, when he retires, about the fact that he's definitely going to be a Hall of Famer, there's no doubt about that. But there's going to be a discussion about how his postseason numbers are average at best. There's no question about that. Like, you can say he's over it now. If that's what you want to think about it, that's fine. But I don't, like, if I'm the Dodgers, I'm not trusting him still. I think you still have to keep an eye on him in the postseason. I think overall, yes, he's pitched well this postseason. There's no doubt about it. But I'm not going to just sit here and say that, yep, every fifth day we can send him out there in the postseason and expect 6 innings, because I don't think you can say that.
But Clayton Kershaw's a guy that's got, I think, 3 Cy Young Awards, multiple Cy Young Awards. He is like an 8-time All-Star. I mean, Clayton Kershaw is one of the best pitchers of his generation.
Yeah.
Arguably one of the best left-handers in the history of baseball. And if he adds a World Series championship to that resume, it's over. Nobody's going to care about his postseason stats. I just...
Okay.
I mean, the guy's done everything that you can do. He's led the league in wins, ERA. Like, the only thing he doesn't have is a World Series championship. And I think that changes probably on Wednesday night. Couple of things before we get out of here. By the way. Did anybody see the polling that shows that it is now almost an insurmountable lead for Joe Biden. So, Jake, I ask you, we're 1 week from the election. A, have you voted yet?
No, I have not voted yet, and I am going to vote. No doubt about it.
Okay, no. I voted this weekend. Did you?
No.
Is it because you're lazy?
Sure.
You said to me, I'm not coming over to watch football this weekend because I have to fulfill my civic duties.
Well, and then you guilt-tripped me into coming over, so I did.
I didn't guilt-trip you into shit. You came over because your girlfriend went hiking.
Okay. All right.
Am I wrong?
We came over because we came over at 8 a.m. because they wanted to go hiking, and then we stayed to watch football.
Well, all I know is that you said you couldn't do anything this weekend because you had to vote.
And it didn't happen. I didn't vote. So what? I'm still going to vote.
Okay. When are you going
to
vote?
I don't know. I got to talk to the girlfriend. I'm not sure yet.
Yeah, it's up to her. I mean, she's got my balls in a jar, so.
Always got to
really,
hate.
Until she's,
always got to hate.
She says that
is
we
it,
can
is
vote.
This,
I can't
is this
vote.
Still about BYU? Are you still salty over that?
I mean, go Packers. Your girlfriend is a dirty Packers fan.
Well, things happen.
Yeah?
You get a little sniffly there?
No, I'm not going to. No, I almost threw up in my mouth when you were like, oh, yeah. Wear the green and gold.
No.
Go Pack, go.
I'm not wearing the green and gold. That ain't happening.
Anyway, you should probably vote. You likely won't because you're lazy. But according to The Economist, which is the leading authority on polling in this country, The Economist, which analyzes polling, economic, and demographic data, they use proprietary, which means their own formula, and they have rarely been wrong about the election.
How long have they been doing it?
Oh, decades.
Okay.
Decades. The Economist says that Joe Biden has a 96% chance of winning the election. 19 out of 20 scenarios have Joe Biden winning the election. Joe Biden has a 99% chance to get more votes than Donald Trump. It would be almost statistically impossible, if you believe The Economist, for Donald Trump to win the Electoral College. Joe Biden's range, the minimum Electoral College votes he would get, and by the way, you need 270 to win the presidency. His range at the bottom is 252. His range at the top is 421.
Jesus.
They are projecting that Donald Trump could at the bottom get 117 votes. And they say the most currently, based on the models, that he could win would be 286. He has less than a 1% chance of winning the presidency when you crunch all the numbers. And when you look at it, almost every poll agrees with this. And it's shocking to me. It is shocking to me that I don't see how Joe Biden loses this election. It would be stunning.
I think the thing for Donald Trump and what he should be worried about is the fact that 60 million people have already voted. That should be scary if you're Donald Trump, because those are people who are clearly plugged in. I think what we're seeing now is that this time around, people are way more plugged into this election than they were the last election. And I think what we're starting to see, and this is kind of, we've talked about this a couple of times, but I think it doesn't get talked about a lot nationally, is that the people you never hear from are voting Biden this time around. They're voting Democratic. And I think that is the biggest challenge politically for Donald Trump. The quiet ones, the people who are not, you know, out doing, you know, Biden stuff or Trump stuff or whatever, those people who are just chilling on their couch, they're voting Biden. And that, I think, is a big problem. And I don't know, you know, part of me says, yeah, I mean, these polls and they have formulas and everything, and they've been right for the most part over the last couple decades about elections. So I'm not saying that's not that the Economist isn't credible, because they absolutely are and they're good at what they do. But what I am saying is, last time around, everybody was saying that Hillary had a dominant lead and she still lost, you know? And so that's why I say I think the Democrats and Joe Biden have done a much better job this election cycle of not taking their foot off the gas and stopping in Pennsylvania yesterday and going to Michigan, going to Wisconsin, continuing to go to those key states to ensure that they're getting the proper votes they need.
The difference is, 4 years ago at this time, Hillary Clinton was plummeting. Like, the bottom was falling out of her campaign. She was not traveling. There was the whole FBI has reopened the investigation into her emails. Like, there was a whole thing happening to Hillary Clinton 4 years ago. That whole thing has not materialized at all for Joe Biden. And the president has tried with Hunter Biden's laptop that has turned out not to be his laptop. With all of the Joe Biden said he's going to abolish oil as soon as he's elected, which he didn't say. With all of the outright effort from the Republicans in the Trump campaign to find scandal on Joe Biden, it's just never materialized.
Yeah.
And what you find is interesting is, Joe Biden's lead is growing. It's not shrinking.
Yeah.
And people, I think, are like, you hear Jared Kushner, the president's son-in-law and one of his top advisors, yesterday addressing Black Americans, saying they have to want to get out of poverty more than we want them out of poverty, which is just a ridiculously inflammatory and racist thing to say. They continue to make these statements, and I think they just keep driving minority votes to Joe Biden. And I think with the continued ignorance that they, and the blissful ignorance that Donald Trump and his campaign are showing to the pandemic, they keep driving voters to Joe Biden. And I'm just amazed by it. Like, this 60 Minutes interview over the weekend was supposedly, you know, just salacious, and you know, that Leslie Stahl, the correspondent for 60 Minutes who interviewed Donald Trump, was unfair, and she wasn't unfair. They were not tough questions. Like, Donald Trump said, these are the toughest questions he had ever been asked, and it was wholly unfair. They were not tough questions at all in any way, shape, or form. She held his feet to the fire, like on healthcare. She keeps talking about, you know, like asking him, hey, what's your plan? You don't have a plan. Yes, we do. We haven't announced it, but we will. But you haven't, and you can't even, can you just tell me details of it? And no, you can't. And then the press secretary for the president, Kayleigh McEnany, walks into the room after the interview and drops this huge photo album looking thing on the desk and says, okay, well, you wanted to see it. Here it is. Here's the president's health plan. And all it is a portfolio of press clippings talking about how bad the Affordable Care Act is and talking about, you know, repealing the ACA and the individual, you know, the individual mandate and all of his successes and lowering drug prices. And it's like, this is not a plan to replace Obamacare. This is the Trump administration putting press clippings in front of a reporter and calling it a plan for healthcare. Like, I'm amazed by all of it. I really am amazed by all of it, but I think people need to get ready that have you thought about what happens if Joe Biden wins?
Yeah, it's not going to be good. It's not going to be good for the next 90 days after the election. I think we'll go through a 90-day period where I think that the country is going to be incredibly violent. I think there is going to definitely be some outright killings of people. I think that's what the Trump base does. I think you have the old folks who are just Trump supporters, but it's that sect of his base that is the Proud Boys, for example, where they support Trump. They're armed people. Like, they're going to go out and they're going to kill people. I really believe that if Trump loses, they're going to say, well, this election is rigged, and they're going to do some stuff. And I think for the next 90 days after the election, if Biden wins, it's going to be a really tumultuous time. And then I think it probably cools off. and life gets back to normal. And I think the most staggering thing is I think we've forgotten what a respectable White House looks and sounds like. You know, I really do. I think we as a country have forgotten what that looks like. And I think, and my hope is, I hope Biden does dominate the election. I hope that he just trounces Trump and we get a definitive win. There can't be any gray area. There can't be like, oh, Biden won 50% to 49%. Like, it's got to be a 70-30 dominant kind of win. And if that happens, I think the country will be in a better place overall.
Yeah, hey, some shout-outs. I know I didn't get to Periscope comments very often. Monarchs9, what's up with you? Good to see you. Barry is all upset because I'm not answering. Sorry, Barry, I was doing the show. Peoria Pete, good morning to you. Alton, who is a good Chicago guy who messages me on Twitter. Alton, appreciate you listening. So everybody listening on Periscope Live this morning, appreciate you very much and appreciate everybody who listens to this show every day. By the way, thanks to everybody who listens on Spotify. That's now our number one avenue or stream. The most people listen to this show now. More of them listen on Spotify than anywhere else. It was iTunes for the longest time. And not that we don't appreciate everybody on iTunes, but just a shout out to everybody listening on Spotify because we see those numbers creep up. And we really appreciate that. So perhaps, Jake, I mean, I don't know. I know that you're getting up at 3 a.m. and not going running anymore. But, you know, are we going to do this show tomorrow morning or, you know, how are you feeling?
I guess we'll just talk baseball and Donnie. I don't know what else we're talking about, but yeah, I guess.
Yeah, it'll be you having the flu because you slept with the windows open and froze your ass off.
Anyway, I'll be fine. Thank you.
Jake, don't be upset because I care about you.
Uh-huh.
Don't. All right, Jake, say goodbye and my dad loves me.
All right, goodbye and my dad hates me.